This is Matt Revoys from La La Land Records, and you've entered the La La Land Lounge on Geekcast Radio, where soundtracks live.
Hello and welcome to the La La Land Lounge here on Geekcast Radio. This is coming to you on a Tuesday, seeing as how most music releases on Tuesdays. That's probably when the La La Land Lounge is going to be released from here on out, is on Tuesdays. I'm, of course, TFG and Mike, and here in Episode 5, joining me is Doug Abel from Talking About My Generation. Hello.
Hello, sir.
And tonight, so as I've said in the last four episodes, La La Land Records over the last three, four, 5 years has sent me various CDs to write reviews for, and I decided to turn it into an audio podcast. And as you heard in the very beginning, we're going to be talking about two very different films that actually have two anniversaries this year, in 2016. This episode of the La La Land Lounge is called The Primal Fear of Ferris Bueller. Now, I know people might be listening to this and be like, TF2 and Mike, you've lost your goddamn mind. But Primal Fear, starring Richard Gere, Laura Linney, and Terry O'Quinn, and Edward Norton, and a bunch of other people, came out 20 years ago this year. Ferris Bueller came out 30 years ago this year. Now, if you head on over to MWire episode 123, we already covered Ferris in movie form, talking about the movie, but here tonight we're going to be talking about the soundtrack for Ferris, but we got to start by going 20 years ago to Primal Fear. I have not seen this movie in God knows how long, and as I say in every episode, I have to actually watch the thing to hear the music in context.
Yeah.
And this was Edward Norton's film debut.
Scary when you think about it, all the stuff that he's done, you know, I mean, from The Hulk and Diner and God, all sorts of stuff.
I mean, most people will know him, you know, famously from, you know, that one movie not supposed to talk about, you know, you just don't talk about Fight Club. That's the rule. So most people will remember him from that for the most part.
I remembered him from American History X when he was a neo-Nazi, which, God, that was good.
Yeah. And I remember him being in this, and I remember Gere being in this, and I'm like, Richard Gere and Edward Norton, that just doesn't, I mean, Richard Gere, you know, Pretty Woman, Officer and a Gentleman, I'm just taking this off the top of my head, folks, First Night, you know.
God, I want to say My Best Friend's Wedding, but I know that's not right.
No, Runaway Bride.
That's the one.
Yep. Yeah, but My Best Friend's Wedding was her, was his better half, his hooker half.
Yeah.
Primal Fear, done by James Newton Howard, which I actually had to look him up, not because I didn't know what he has done, because the last few years he's been collaborating with Hans Zimmer on the various DC superhero film things with Man of Steel and the Batman Nolan films and that kind of thing. So I've known what he's been doing and what he's done in the past, but the reason why I had to look James Newton Howard up is because I thought he was dead.
Oh, man.
No!
Something a composer wants to hear.
No, it's not. Okay, well, I got him confused with James Horner. James Horner did pass away recently. So that's why I had to look the guy up, and I'm like, wait, is he still with us? Because I could not remember. And I just got the two confused. And may Mr. Horner rest in peace, obviously. Primal Fear, The read-up on the La La Land website, lalalandrecords.com, where soundtracks live, La La Land Records and Paramount Pictures present the remastered and expanded reissue of renowned composer James Newton Howard's who was also done The Fugitive, Grand Canyon, Wyatt Earp, and all that stuff. The original motion picture score to the 1996 dramatic thriller feature film Primal Fear, starring Richard Gere, Edward Norton, and Laura Linney, directed by Gregory Hoblit. What a unfortunate last name to have. Understated and elegant, yet dramatically complex and emotionally powerful, James Newton Howard's notable score expertly enriches and enhances this acclaimed and powerful legal thriller. Remastered and expanded by more than 30 minutes over its initial soundtrack release, this special limited edition of 1,000 units features previously unreleased cues, alternates, demos, and more, and is produced by Dan Goldwasser and mastered by Doug Schwartz. May the Schwartz be... No, sorry. I'm sure he gets that joke all the time.
Oh, yeah.
The exclusive and in-depth liner notes written by Daniel Schwieger, and the crisp art direction is done by Dan Goldwasser as well. So this has a total of 40 tracks. The first 22 tracks are basically the score from the film. Tracks 23 to 32 are the special bonus cues. They're basically alternate or unused versions of the film elements. Then there are from 33 to 36, there are album mixes, the murder scene album mix and various things. And then 37 to 40 are the songs and demo tracks as well. Going back and watching this movie, I completely forgot what to expect out of it. Considering since this movie's release, we've had so many things, so many TV shows and movies dealing with either multiple personality disorder or dissociative identity disorder, seeing as how it's not called multiple personalities anymore. And this was kind of the linchpin, I think, in the 90s of saying, hey, this is a thing. This actually does exist, this multiple personality thing. And I remember seeing this back then, but I didn't remember seeing a lot. I saw bits and pieces of it, but I never saw really the whole thing until obviously now. And wow, this movie was good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, this movie, the thing about it had me thinking... Is he faking? Is it real? Is it, you know, did he do it? Did he not do it? You know, and then you find out that Roy comes out and admits that he killed her and, you know, that he tried to kill her and all that. And it's just like, okay. And, oh my God, I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it. So I don't want to give away the very end, but it's like, you know, hey, I hope her neck is okay.
Yeah. This ties into the whole Catholic Church and altar boys and everything else. And what I forgot about movies of 80s and 90s caliber, like rated R films, because I believe I'm not looking at the Wikipedia. I should be looking at the Wikipedia, but I'm not, folks. You should be proud that I'm not. I believe this film was rated R. It would almost have to be for the videotape scene. I forgot that movies back... Because we're so used to nowadays the PG-13 aspect of pretty much every single film that's ever been released. The only time I ever see a film that's rated R on anything, not just watching the movie, but just seeing a rated R film is if it's a horror movie. Like, every other movie now is PG-13 at this point.
Unless you see boobs or something like that, or nudity, it's like, okay.
Yeah. But see, that's what the late 80s and early 90s were all about. You know, it was all about that R rating. You know, you look at RoboCop, you look at the Lethal Weapons, at least the first two.
Yeah.
You know, you look at, like, stuff like Body of Evidence or Basic Instinct or whatever. I had forgotten how, I don't want to say blatant, but how open they were with certain parts of nudity and sexuality and all that stuff, and it was just kind of strange seeing that. Like, I have not, up until about I think 5 years ago, I had not seen the original RoboCop in a long time. Watching that movie again and realizing how violent that movie is, I'm like, oh my god. But Primal Fear, Really enjoyed the film. I think all the actors did a wonderful job. It's kind of weird seeing Terry O'Quinn with actual hair and a mustache.
Well, you saw that in The Rocketeer, so, you know, when he played Howard Hughes.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying compared to now, most of the time, like on Lost and things like that he's done recently, he's either bald with a gray mustache or no mustache at all. So
yeah.
So that was a little strange, but I love the movie. And James Newton Howard's score for this, It is dark and epic, and it's just one of those scores that will stick with you. I know. Last time we did one of these, when we talked about Johnny Quest, it wasn't something that either one of us were going to go back to and on a regular basis to listen to. I could listen to this almost once every 3 or 4 months. This score is just, it brings you in, and it basically turns your emotions upside down.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing with this is that when I was listening to the score, I kind of thought, you know, I could almost listen to this on a car trip. But then I started thinking, do I really want to listen to it on a car trip? Because, you know, I could be driving a long distance and all of a sudden stopping and going, somebody's going to kill me in the bathroom or something, you know? I don't know that I necessarily want to be listening to it. It's that dark and that kind of twisted sound, and you kind of get these feelings of it. It definitely brings emotion out. That's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
This movie reminded me of another film that I believe Newton Howard scored as well. Obviously, Primal Fear has some religious aspects to it, but it's not soaked in religion. Part of the plot is, you know, big business losing money on land that the church bought and things like, you know. So it was more of a financial plot when it came to why. Part of it when it came to why the Archbishop was killed, but it's one of those things where as soon as I'm watching this movie and I'm looking at Ed Norton in this role and I'm like, oh my god, he's the devil's advocate. It's all yes. I did. The first thing I thought of when watching this movie again for the first time in a long time was Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino in The Devil's Advocate, and I believe it was 1999, and 3 years after this, you know. Because this movie has that kind of grand scale sound to it. It has that, oh my god, do not listen to this in the dark kind of. There's a lot of things that I cannot sit here and watch in the dark. Unsolved Mysteries has always been something, even now, that I cannot watch in the dark. Because Robert Stack, as awesome as he was, creeps you the hell out with that voice that he uses. In Unsolved Mysteries. And this is another one. It's one of those movies you should... if you're not into scary... And this movie is not scary by any means. It's more intense than anything else because you just don't know...
Yeah.
Nowadays, everybody under the sun feels like they can predict what the hell is going to happen in a movie. And that is one thing, ever since I was little, I have always hated. I want to be able to find out what the hell is going to happen as it happens. I don't want, you know, my mom used to do this all the time when she was alive. She would say, oh, that's the guy that did it. Or, oh, that, you know, and it turns out, you know, she'd been right. And I'm like, no, don't say that. Don't just sit here and watch the movie and enjoy it. Don't.
Well, that's why so many of us like, you know, things like Wild Things or...
God.
Well, yeah, I know. It's last 10 minutes of the movie, last 15 minutes of the movie where you get the twists.
Yeah.
That and, you know, Sixth Sense. I know a lot of people hate on that movie and hate on the director and everything, but, you know, it's the twists are what you look for, and that's – you don't expect what you get.
Right.
And I think Absolutely. That Primal Fear even had that for this time frame.
Oh, yeah. And this was the age, you know, 1996 was, we were on the cusp of the age of the lawyer legal thriller. Because in the 90s, between The Firm and The Pelican Brief, all the John Grisham novels were getting adapted into movies. And, you know, you had so many lawyer movies, legal thriller movies. And this is just another one of those really, really good ones. If I had to pick a couple of favorite tracks off of here... the murder scene, track 1, I like that one. I thought that was really cool. Track 5, Don't Smile, where he tells him not to smile. Let's see here. The courtroom montage was fun. That was interesting. And how James Newton Howard took in... All composers do this with characters, because you have to create a character theme for characters. You can't just have, like, you know, normal, you know, if you look at superhero shows, each hero has his own, you know, entrance theme, that kind of thing. And
right.
And the track here where Roy appears, it's track 9, the film version of it, just that dark tone music and that quick switch. Because I was not expecting the quick switch when he's talking to the psychologist. Because later in the movie, you see that character's name is Vale. You see Vale looking at that video again, and he sees the switch, and it's like, wow, I was not expecting that. What other bits do you want to bring up about the score that you noticed or you enjoyed?
I did listen to a lot of the alternate stuff because mm-hmm. I always like seeing what I missed.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just some of the alternates, they didn't quite work as well as the film versions. Like obviously the murder scene and Love Hurts, and you know those are some great sounds or great clips, I should say, from the soundtrack here that didn't actually get on.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked them, but they just weren't quite right for it. The others were much better, you know. That's the best way I can say it.
Yeah. Alright, folks. I'm out of a 0 to 5 scale. I've got to give this a 4. I really enjoyed this. And again, as I said, this is going to be one of those La La Land Records releases that I have in my iTunes library that I can go to when I want, you know. Between this and... earlier this year, my buddy Movie Revolt Dan and I, we did a movie review for Shawshank Redemption, because La La Land Records this year released that score as well. And I remember when I got that score in the mail, and we've already talked about it on MWire, but when I got that score in the mail, it was raining that day, and just the fact of how dark and ominous and dreary the score for Shawshank is, it's like, wow, yeah. This really fits the weather right now, folks. But Primal Fear, yeah. What are you going to give it, 0 to 5?
I'll probably give it a 4 as well. It's really, really good. It's better than I expected it to be for soundtrack. Again, the only thing that's stopping it is that I wouldn't be able to listen to it on a car trip because I'd be too creeped out.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to listen to it on a car trip because when you're actually driving, you have to pay attention to everything, and this music, as you said, would just scare the bejesus out of you, and you'd be careening all over the road.
I'd be looking for the killer to come over the back seat to get me.
Yeah. Your wife loves you too much to have that happen.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break here on the La La Land Lounge. We'll be back after this, and we're going to talk somebody's day off, because after 30 years, somebody actually got a day off for a soundtrack. Alright, folks, we are back, and we're here to talk about Bueller. Ferris Bueller. That's right, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. La La Land Records and Paramount Pictures commemorate the 30th anniversary of Ferris Bueller's Day Off with the world premiere of the official soundtrack album. Oh, yeah. Requested by fans for more than 3 decades, the official original motion picture soundtrack to the classic John Hughes film starring Matthew Broderick, Alan Ruck, and Mia Sara has finally arrived in a special limited edition collector's CD featuring songs from the film and the original score by acclaimed composer Ira Newborn, who also did the Naked Gun trilogy, Uncle Buck, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Long sought after and rare song tracks like Beat City by the Flowerpot Men, mixed and mastered for this release by original artists Ben Watkins and Adam Peters, and I'm Afraid by Blue Room, vocal and instrumental versions, make their CD world premieres here, while Sieg Sieg Sputnik's ultra-violence mix of Love Missile F-111 makes its North American CD debut. Standout tracks such as Yellow's Oh Yeah, the Dream Academy's ballad Edge of Forever, and their museum scene instrumental Please, Please, Please Let Me Get What I Want, Wayne Newton's Parade showstopper Donkashane, and more are showcased here, as well as the world premiere of composer Ira Newborn's original score. Bonus tracks include alternate score and source cues, produced for La La Land Records by Dan Goldwasser and Neil S. Bulk, mastered in stereo from original Vault Elements by Stephen Marsh. This special release of 5,000 units features revealing in-depth liner notes by writer Tim Grieving, with new and extensive interview comments from the film's original music supervisor, Tarquin Gotch, the film's editor, Paul Hirsch, and John Hughes' son, James Hughes. Okay, now, you said you said off-air that you're going to rip this one a little bit, but the reason I'm sure that you're going to do this is certain things are missing, and it says here, due to licensing restrictions, a few of the film songs could not be included on the CD, but they are available elsewhere. The celebratory release is a dynamite listen and is a booklet fascinating revelatory read, an absolute must for fans. So get yours now, because even Abe Froman's going to want one of these. You can listen to the now playing Ferris Bueller soundtrack podcast featuring interviews with album producers Dan Goldwasser and Neil S. Bulk and the band Blue Room, who also perform I'm Afraid Live. So I will actually be having Dan and Neil on here at some point. I had Neil on here a couple of years ago on Geekcast Radio for an interview all about the Lethal Weapon score, so it's going to be interesting talking to them about Ferris. But yeah, so that was your main gripe about this, right? Was that there were certain things missing?
Yes, damn it. they left off. I have to curse the English beat because they left off March of the Swivelheads. I get it. I get it. You know, they can't have it on there because of licensing, but come on, that's the whole chase when he's running home.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows that song. You know, it's like, oh my god, we know that song. We have to listen to it. And it's the slow motion jump off mm-hmm. the trampoline.
Yep, it is. You know. And I don't necessarily blame the English beat. I don't think it's them. The whole thing with the licensing deal and everything else, it's whoever owns the rights to publish the music. So
yeah,
if the English beat themselves don't actually own the song, because, you know, most of the time when recordings happen for anything, it's usually the publisher, whether it's, you know, something like Arista Records or RCA Records or Hollywood Records or Warner Brothers, yeah. whoever you know, pays them to do the music, yeah, that's technically who owns the rights to distribute it. So the fact that they couldn't get licensing for that song specifically does very much suck. But as I said in reading what was on the websites, a lot of that stuff is readily available. You can find that elsewhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know.
Insert it. But Ferris Bueller's Day Off, this single disc release here, absolutely love this. I had to, and I don't mean to say this to be negative, but I actually had to watch the movie again to figure out where some of these songs were in the film, because the Love Missile F-111, like I did not remember that.
Yeah, I didn't either. I have to admit I didn't watch the film for this one.
Yeah.
Only because I've seen it umpteen million times and I know the film pretty much inside and out. But I'm like listening to some of these songs, I'm going, this is great stuff. This is definitely, you know, 80s locked right in the middle of, you know, middle of everything, John Hughes films type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going, I don't remember half of these songs.
Yeah. The ones I remember, oh yeah, I do remember Beat City. I do remember, obviously, Don Kashane is the parade scene.
Yeah, Don Kashane and Twist and Shout, which...
Yeah, the Twist and Shout version on... Like, I wish they had a recording of what when Ferris was actually doing it. I know they probably couldn't do that or whatever because of the Beatles or something.
Yeah.
But they got the marching band version on here. For me, what I've wanted out of this, outside of, as we've already talked about, the English beat, outside of actually getting a full-on version of Yellow, of Oh Yeah, I wanted the Ira Newborn score. Because that, to me, also made this movie, is those moments. Let's see here. Cameron in bed, Ferris goes Hawaiian. And yeah. That's essentially the whole beginning scene when Cameron's in bed sick and Ferris keeps calling him. And they keep going back and forth. And they have the thing at the end, you know, let my Cameron go, you know, and I just, I always wanted that. So that was one of the things that really, really impressed me with getting the music by Ira Newborn here. Let's see, Rooney on Patrol, that was a good one. The unused Save It Ferris, that was always cool. You know, Rooney sneaking around, and then, hey, Star Wars, yay.
Yeah.
let's see. The he's going to marry me thing. There's a couple of alternate score cues here. Ferris on Line 2 is an alternate theme from Star Trek, which is apparently unused. Cameron Takes the Heat alternate, and then the source cues. That's what I love about certain things about movies and TV shows. You look at, like, Batman the Animated Series, and there's several times where the Joker has his theme music, like the ones when he's doing his TV show and things like that. They put those source cues on the Batman CDs that La La Land has released, and here for source cues you have the Coughlin Brothers Mortuary.
I don't remember that, unfortunately. You know, it's... I'm going to have to go back and listen to it again. I mean, it's like trying to place some of the stuff. It's like, where the hell did that come from? Obviously, commercials and stuff.
It's in the movie. It's when they, it's the source cue for it. It's when they, when Rooney calls the funeral home and we first see it, that's when the music happens as the phone's ringing.
That's right.
At the funeral home and the machine picks it up. Celebrated Minuet, Ballpark Baloney. Ballpark Baloney is, hey batta, hey batta, hey batta, showing batta. Way to go, Cubs. Now you can wait another 2 centuries to win again. Yes, I stole that joke from my buddy Neil.
Well, I already told somebody that, you know, this is proof that that the world is going to end come Thursday or Tuesday or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, the Cubs won the World Series. That means that Trump is going to win. The world's going to fall apart. You know, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Yeah. But I, you know, like I said, you know, I've had this score for a couple of weeks since Matt over at La La Land sent it to me, and just listening to it again. Actually, I have two versions. I have one with everything in it, and then I had to go and take Ira's stuff out to put in a separate playlist so I could just hear the instrumental stuff, and it's just so good. I absolutely love this. This is not it is because it's Ferris Bueller, folks, but even if this wasn't, I would still be listening to this stuff, because this is some really good music.
Yeah, it is. It's just... everything about this one, I was really impressed. This, as opposed to the Primal Fear soundtrack, I could listen to this one on a car trip, no problem, continuously. You know, this would be on my iPod for sure.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So I think that's going to do it for us here inside the La Land Lounge. I assume that we're both giving the Ferris release a 5, even though there are certain things that are missing, but that could not be helped.
I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5, just because of that.
I gotta give it a 5, because it's just so fun to listen to. Coming up next here in the La Land Lounge, I'm not sure. I do know that starting this Thursday, we're going to be having our GCRN Top 100 Animated Characters Countdown with Part 1, which is the reveals of numbers 100 to 76. So you can check that out on Thursday. Next time around for the La La Land Lounge, it might be... we might do Justice League versus Teen Titans and Batman Bad Blood, which is actually kind of funny because it's two movies, two scores by Frederick Wiedman. It's on one disc. Well, it's on two discs, but it's one release. So how I've been doing these is I've been taking two things and mashing them together. Like we had Flash Season 2 and Supergirl Season 1. We had, this time around we had Primal Fear and Ferris Bueller. With this one, all I have to do is just do one episode to talk about two different movies. Let's see, I also have Blind Spot Season 1 by Blake Neely over here. So we got that. And then there's DC's Legends of Tomorrow Season 1 and Arrow Season 4. So got a few more episodes coming up. And then whatever La La Land sends me for Christmas this year, I'm not sure what their Christmas releases are going to be. So that's what's going to be coming up over the next few months here on the La La Land Lounge.
They bought it. Incredible. One of the worst performances of my career, and they never doubted it for a second.
Alright, folks, well, Doug's mixer decided to crap the bed, so you can find him, email him mygenerationpodcast@gmail.com, go over to mygenerationpodcast.com to check out all things about Talking About My Generation. You can find him on Facebook as well for Talking About My Generation. You can find me on Twitter @TF2andMike, also follow @GeekCastRadio for all the other network updates, and as I said earlier, tune in next time to the La La Land Lounge when we either are watching the Justice League versus Teen Titans and Batman Bad Blood, or the Legends of the Arrowverse, where we talk about DC's Legends of Tomorrow Season 1 and Arrow Season 4. So who knows? You never know what's going to happen here in the La La Land Lounge. So head on over to lalalandrecords.com, where soundtracks live, and I'll catch you next time.
I had a great time today.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Do you think Cameron's gonna be okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. For the first time in his life. He's gonna be just fine.
You knew what you were doing when you woke up this morning, didn't you?
Me? Go. I'll call you tonight.
Okay. I love you.
I love you too.
He's gonna marry me.
You know what it's like to be pulled out of work, to pick up your daughter at the police station?
No, not really.
Well, on top of everything else, I was about to close the damn deal with the Vermont people.
Sorry.
I was gonna take my commission and buy Ferris a car. Jeannie, what the hell are you doing? You trying to kill us? God, look at this mess. Paper all over the place. I'll never get this back in order. Jeannie at the police station. She got a speeding ticket, another speeding ticket, and I lost the Vermont deal because of her.
I think we should shoot her. Looking for this? Gotcha, Ferris.
How's Ferris? Let's go in and check.
Okay.
Okay.
How was your day?
I have dreamed about this. And this time, goddamn you little bastard. I've got you right where I want you.
Ferris, we're home.
So, how would you feel about another year of high school? Under my close, personal supervision.
Hi. Thank God you're all right. You know, we've been worried sick about you. Thank you, Mr. Rooney, for driving him home. Now, I want you
to go upstairs and get in bed. Scoot! Can you imagine someone as sick as Ferris trying to walk home from the hospital? Oh, kids. By the way, Mr. Rooney, you left your wallet on the kitchen floor.